Welcome back to Biff, a podcast about superhero TV shows, movies, and just great weddings. My name is Dan Morin. I'm joined, as always, by the rest of my mysterious, hidden, dimensional beings. John Moltz is here. Hi, John.
I am John, not Jovi.
Okay. Just thank you. That's good. Clarify that. Guy English is also here. Hi, Guy.
Sometimes I really can be a gin and tonic.
I've said that about you.
If I put my mind to it to the point that I can't put my mind to anything more, that's I'm a gin and tonic.
Mm, yeah. I've been there.
Yep. They're good, man. They're lime on a hot day like today. Perfect. Yeah.
All right. We're gonna need a quick break while we all go and make ourselves a drink.
Yeah, right.
We are here to discuss season one, episode three of Ms. Marvel, entitled Destined. And Guy English is going to take us through that episode.
I am. So we open up in British...
I just got that.
I do take responsibility for the British Empire. It's true. I do. I actually do.
Someone shared.
Well, yeah. Anyway, we open in British-occupied India in 1942. Kemran's mom digs up a blue severed arm wearing the bangle. Is it Cree? I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Cree-ish, right?
Cree-ish, yeah.
Yeah, so our intrepid amateur archaeologists separate with one another, and one of them runs off the bangle. The woman we believe is Kamala's grandmother. Do we get names in this scene? I don't think we do.
She calls her Aisha.
Yeah, and they are in the subtitles, too. Aisha. So we've got Najma and Aisha.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And presumably, the interrupting recaps is what we do. I assume you guys also caught the image on the floor as we zoom out.
No. Sure we did. Yeah. But why don't you explain it to our readers?
you didn't see it? All right. The floor as they zoom out of the temple is the Ten Rings.
Oh. Fascinating. Yeah. So, okay, do you want to do Conspiracy Corner right now?
In the middle? Yeah, let's do it.
I'm all for throwing spokes in the middle of this cobbled together wheel that I made. So, Ten Rings plus Kree. Fascinating. We know that the Ten Rings are also of some sort of extraterrestrial origin, but I believe Carol's like, I've never seen an energy signature like this. Meanwhile, these cats are telling us that they're from another dimension, which I also want to talk about, because what does that mean? Like, what
does that mean?
We've got Asgard,
universe.
We've got like all kinds of stuff. Right, like, what does this even mean? You know,
realm. It's not an alternate timeline.
Right. It's not a multiverse. Right.
So we've got a quantum realm. We've got Asgard, which is just really far away. Like, there's all kinds of stuff that I don't know how it all fits together at all.
We definitely needed another thing.
Right. Yeah. Like, is it just another name for something else? Like, yes. Who knows?
I think it's what we got a glimpse of in her visions, right?
Sure. So possibly. The negative zone?
Essentially. Yeah, probably. Maybe. I don't know. It's unclear. There's a lot of questions. This episode raises a lot of questions. It doesn't really answer any of them, which is fine.
Well,
I'm
it answers
okay
some. I mean, it sort of answers some.
Yeah. Yeah, we know who can dance. We know that.
Yeah. That's right. All of them.
Anyway, okay, I think that's bigger than we'll get back to that. Yeah. We cut to Cameron's home with his mom explaining the story to Kamala. We learn that they're all a gang of djinn and have been waiting for 100 years. Cameron's mom says that they didn't know there was any family left until Kamala put on the mangle and they sensed the presence of Noor, which we are told means the light. They've been cut off from their home dimension, the Noor dimension, and they need the bangle to get back. After the title card, Kamala bursts into Bruno's room and fills him in on all the details, saying that she needs his help to fix it somehow. They do. I love how they just gloss over this. She's like, "You're a math genius. What do you know about interdimensional travel?" I love it. It's so comic book. It's like, yeah, I'll get right on that.
I do love that he drops Eric Selvig.
Like, oh yeah, Dr. Eric Selvig. Yeah. I know that guy.
Yeah, I love that. He calls a book by our pal Dr. Selvig, and moving
on. Hamptons together.
Yeah, I just love it. Like, you can pull a like an old issue of Popular Mechanics off the shelf and like know how to do interdimensional travel.
Well, it's a different world. They've been to space in places that we haven't. So, hey.
You've seen those old popular mechanics, which is like, here's a blending with it, like a blender with a nuclear generator in it. Like,
for you. Just
insane, like fantasy stuff. You know,
that is a radioactive shake. Don't drink that.
Well, you know, from like the '50s and like the atomic age, but man, it was wild thinking in those days. Meanwhile, at the mosque, the DODC comes to investigate the enhanced individual, and they're having they're being real dicks about it. I forget this agent's name.
She's Deaver.
She's a dick. Deaver. Okay. She's a bit of a Deaver.
That's all you know.
Yeah, she's a bit of a Deaver. That's true. Nakia, who I wrote down as Natty, but it's Nakia, right? Yeah. Nakia manages to shoo them away by knowing her rights in an awesome little FU scene where the agent says, "What, did you learn them in high school?" She's like, "No, from watching what?
Law and Order
reruns, yeah. But I'm not wrong." Cool. Anyway, Nakia bursts into, there's a lot of bursting. There's a lot of like, I'm taking the room in this episode. Nakia bursts into Kamal's room and tells her all about the DODC visit, pointing out the xenophobia and racism behind it. She tells Kamala the good news about having been elected to the mosque board. Are they calling it the mosque board? They just keep saying board.
Mosque board. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if there was a cultural name, like whatever. You know what I mean? Like a.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
I don't think they give it a specific
name. If there is, they're not using it. I think they're just saying the
okay.
word.
Okay, good. I just didn't want to miss stuff. At Amir's pre-wedding party, but they did use a specific name for this, and it went in one eye and out the other. At Amir's pre-wedding party, we learned that Kamala's grandmother has been absent and wasn't at her mom's wedding either. Outside, Kamala has a great conversation with her dad about Nightlight. He tells her that good isn't something you are.
That's not
good
her dad.
Is a thing that you do.
That's the imam.
Oh, sorry. It was the imam. Yep. Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, my notes are so goofy. He tells her that, which is basically her great power comes great responsibility kind of thing. Like, you don't just get to be sit around and be good. You have to actually improve the world and somehow. She seems to take that to mean that she should help the genies. We are conflicted about that in this moment. Later that evening, Kamala's dad runs into Bruno at the bodega while he's there to buy something sweet. I didn't see what it was, but I have to imagine it's some culturally.
Hostess fruit pie.
Like Hostess fruit pie,
Oh, is that it? It was so basic? Okay.
He talks about how much they're synthetic, which I love. I love that. Yeah. I love him so much. Yeah. He's great.
He's such a sweet person. Anyway, so he gets really excited about Bruno's notes about the djinn, and he translates the Uro for him, revealing to him that the djinn were exiled from their home world and damned to live out the rest of their lives in our world, really doing the ghost spectral kind of thing. They need this bangle to get home, but to unlock it, it will require a primordial power. So that sounds not great. Bruno later tells Kamala, who bursts into his room, I think. I don't know. There's a lot of... Anyway, Bruno later tells Kamala that it is possible that they could achieve interdimensional travel, but it'll come at a great risk and possibly be very destructive. He's equating it to like the power of the sun. I don't know about you guys. I'm getting Carol Danvers vibes here.
Sure. I had saved that. I was saving that for Conspiracy Corner, but since we're doing Conspiracy Corner.
Well,
having our Conspiracy Corner dessert with dinner.
the best
I
way to have it.
We might as well say that. Yeah, and I was like, Carol's going to show up, right? And I mean, possibly send them back.
Yeah, who knows? I mean, primordial power really goes back to the stones, right? Like, that's it's a bit of a dead giveaway, plus the power of a sun. Anyway, and they talk about her quite a bit in this episode because they're saying Carol, in that exact scene, in fact, they say Carol Danvers would have just do it.
Yeah, right.
And he's like, well, Carol Danvers would be cocky, basically, which is also true. Although we have not seen it fall back in her face at any point. Like, she's very self-assured, but it is yet to go south. Do you know what I mean? Like,
So far, it works out for her.
So often happens. Yeah, so far it's been working out. Yeah. She gets into a nice chat with her mom, who assures her that she's not alone while she's patching up her knee. I like that the knee damage is persistent. gives her like a fragility sort of thing that Peter Parker used to have back in the old days of Spider-Man.
She's been bounced around an awful lot. I mean, she's really, like, even when she was training, she was taking some serious falls and stuff like that. So I was kind of wondering if the thing was giving her some sort of defense, but kind of doesn't seem like they're seems like they're implying that it does not.
To some degree, which we'll talk about later.
She could really be hurt more than, like, you know, in reality, she would be hurt more than she, you know, she is, but.
Yeah. Anyway, I just liked it because it gives her a vulnerability and it reminds us that we're still dealing with a kid, basically, who's pretty much out of their depth. Anyway, following that, we see her dad giving a great pep talk to Ahmet. I really, really love that scene. I thought it was really cool, and it got to sort of the heart of the characters and the heart of the family without being too preachy or too practiced. It just felt like a really preachy. Sincere. I mean,
it's gives him some hope and some. That's a pep talk in a way.
But exactly. Yeah, yeah. He's all bummed because he doesn't have that much money in the bank, and his dad, what does he say? You've got that much? I don't know. But he gives him...
he gives a little jab, and then he's like... then he's like, okay, come here.
Yeah, I like that money thing, because it goes on later to, like, when they're trying to evacuate the wedding, he goes to grab the money. I love him. He's so awesome. We don't get a lot of him, but he's just funny all the time.
Yeah, anyway, he's great.
Yeah, and then we get a really lovely, fun wedding ceremony, where going into how great they both are, I really, really enjoyed how it was laid back. Like, it wasn't a stodgy affair. It was very ornate. But the fact that both of them were cracking jokes
during the wedding ceremony.
During the wedding ceremony. It was so great.
I like it. It sort of fades away a little bit because they do a zoom out. But, like, when they say you're now husband and wife, they do like a fist bump, like handshake thing. Which is it's a little thing, but they reach across and do like a fist bump, a handshake thing. And I was like, that's awesome. I love that.
Yeah. I love it. Cause I love that she starts really sincere and then does like a middling one and then kind of cracks a joke and he does the opposite. But it's just so sincere and so lovely. I just loved it. I felt really good watching that scene. Anyway, back at the genie lair, is there a word for genie lair? You'd think that after watching 80 seasons of Supernatural, Dan and I would know what a genie lair is called.
Yeah, you would have that down, right?
Yeah, but no, whatever. Gin lair. Gin room? Gin joint. There we go. Calling it a gin joint.
Gin joint, yeah.
That's where Qui-Gon Gin hangs out. At the Qui-Gon Gin joint.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. We're not talking about the other show yet. Back at the gin joint, Cameron's mom is pissed that her son was keeping Kamala's text from her. Kamala had told him that she needed more time to figure out if she actually wanted to help activate the bangle, because, you know, blowing up the world seems not cool. She takes a pretty abrupt heel turn and says she's not going to ask nicely anymore. This was a bit of a quick heel turn.
They compressed it a little bit. You went from like one to murder in about 30 seconds.
Well, it's really the thing that I was surprised about when he came in and started saying, like, they're gonna kill everybody. Like, what? Really? Wow, that was okay. Yeah, they're not just gonna come in and rough people up until they get what they want. They're gonna kill everybody.
Right. Yeah, they're really evil, apparently. That's what we're learning.
I guess so. Yeah, they didn't seem like it 5 minutes ago.
I mean, even if you being an over-the-top teenager, there's a big leap between even what they do, which is obviously no good, but it's not like they're murdering. I don't want to split hairs on this. They're obviously evil, but it was weird. The thing is, the heel turn felt unmotivated to me. She'd asked nicely. She thinks we're going okay. This seems like a minor hiccup that doesn't require you to do
steps there, right? We're like, oh, we try to cajole, and then maybe we try like slight threaten. Yeah. And it's like, no, we escalated. We went again 0 to 60. Like,
yeah,
because we got plotting it there.
Weird, right?
Yeah, we got it from the ominous reading of the text at the bodega, but it's not motivated by that character. Do you know what I mean? Like, we understand that, oh, these are worse entities than we believe them to be, but there's no rationale to like why she just flips her lid there. Yeah.
It needed a couple more scenes, obviously, but I felt I feel like they maybe were worried they were too compressed in for time or something, or plotting in the rest of the episode. But it felt like it needed, you needed to sprinkle in those scenes a little bit more to just give it time to be like, oh, you're not going to help us. Well, that's a real shame to, you know, like. You need to escalate gradually,
particularly since this is someone we only really met in this episode,
right? Exactly. Right.
We, you know, she's at the very end of the previous episode, but like for like 3 seconds,
whatever. We don't learn anything. Yeah.
We had had a few more scenes with just Cameron and Kamala hanging out, I think we could have understood more about their relationship, which was cute when she meets the genie family. And I'm all teasing him. Like, that was lovely. Mm-hmm. But we also could have heard that Cameron thinks his mom has a temper. You know, like, he could have laid a little bit of a groundwork for,
like, some, like, hey, yeah, I know they all seem really nice, but, like, man, just, you know, be careful or something. Yeah. You need a little something.
Yep. Yeah. Anyway. And then we go to the wedding, and it's time to dance, dance, dance. And it's fun. That is, it's just a lovely scene. Yeah. It's a whole nicely choreographed thing. It's feels a little Bollywood to me, although I don't know much about Bollywood, but
part of it is part of it is very contemporary, like they're all kind of doing their own thing, which I love. It's like it's a whole melting pot of various dance styles. I love, like, you know, the parents of the bride clearly, you know, are come out and they're doing their dances, and then the I think maybe her little brother or something who's dressed up in the Hulk outfit from that Kamala's mom made. It's a delightful mashup of all these different things.
And we learned the band name is Brown Jovi, I love.
Yep.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, that whole bit is hilarious. And then then Cameron interrupts Bruno and Kamala as they're just about to dance with us to a slow song, and he tells her that the family is in danger because the genie are going to come and kill everyone. Yeah, extreme, dude. Sticking to the classics.
Sure enough. His timing is good.
Yeah. And that's a very 80s teen movie kind of thing. Like, the dance gets interrupted. But God, it's probably every teen movie. I just haven't seen them since the 80s. Anyway, sticking to the classics, Kamala pulls the fire alarm. Inexplicably, Living on a Prayer starts playing. Because I wasn't sure if it was diegetic. Like
a backing track? Yeah.
Or like Brown Jovi was just doing a Milli Vanilli. I don't know. Like, I couldn't tell if it was, like, well, like I said, diegetic or what. But anyway, it's fun. And then we get a huge fight. And we get to a creepy bit where Cameron's mom manages to turn off all the lights. And is that when we see the train? I can't remember what the sequence of events are.
No, she grabs her wrist. Yeah. So they both, they're both touching the bangle. And then
that's it. Yeah.
See it.
And then whatever. Cut back to a bunch more fight. Kamala seems to be slowly getting either better at her powers, or her instincts are kicking in enough that, like, she keeps managing to shield herself before she gets really wailed on. She does summon the big fist of smiting a couple of times.
Once Bruno gets hurt, basically.
Yeah, I think that's when she really starts. Yeah, her defensive powers work fine, and then her offensive powers kick in when Bruno gets hurt.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Cameron manages to show up to defend Bruno, and then he gets into more of a fight. I like that he stands in front of him and he's like, don't hurt him.
He doesn't remember his name.
Brian. Why bad?
Yeah. Bruno does say that he thinks he's screwing up his name on purpose. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's true.
He might be.
But do you stick to that? Like, if he sticks to the joke while he's about to fight, like, his ancient family member, good for him, but, you know, maybe it's time to drop the joke then.
A couple things that could be going on. Well, we can talk about it a little bit in the conspiracy corner, but I don't.
I'm one paragraph away.
I'm curious to know where what exactly his deal is. Cameron. Yeah, we can talk about him in a minute.
Yeah. Anyway, so fight. They manage to meet up with Nikia outside after Bruno gets hurt, and they limp away. These genies have been watching too many horror movies, because I don't know why they're walking, but whatever. it doesn't make sense. They meet up with Nikia outside the wedding venue, and she figures out that Kamala is Nightlight. Upon returning home, her parents have been very worried about her, and know that she pulled a fire alarm. She then receives a call from her grandmother asking if she saw the train, and that her and her mom need to go to India immediately.
Pakistan.
What did I say? Yeah, India. Oops. Yeah. Sorry. It's because at the top we started in British occupied India, and I messed it up. And that's the end of the show. So fascinating, I thought. I really liked the cultural bits. I did not particularly like the movement of the players, of the characters so much.
Well, yeah, that one,
the way the story worked.
Plot
is the key point.
Struggles a bit in this episode because it felt like very much like we need to get to this point because we're halfway through the show and we need to have, you know, this and this happen. I appreciated, you know, I
feel like they could have set it up different. You know, I mean, like they didn't have to set it up. They didn't. I mean, I guess they could have had Kamran come and be an ally and say, you know, sort of like try and ease in and say some bad people are coming. And, you know, like come to warn her, like he's left his family because he knows they're about to do something bad. And then they show up and they're bad from the get go.
Yeah, because I think in some ways maybe it would have been better off if they hadn't tried to play them off as super friendly and nice in that first scene. Like if they'd started out with them being menacing and threatening.
Or even just slightly menacing.
Yeah, exactly. Menacing or threatening or something in that first scene, it would have played a lot smoother. I have some other decision questions. One, if a bunch of interdimensional beings are trying to kill you, should you go home when they know who you are? That feels like a bad idea.
Except they've been captured.
That's true. They have been captured by damage control.
Like she's okay because damage control has.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay.
Are you also spectacularly unimpressed at their power level?
Well, it was confusing because they're like beating the crap out of her, and then damage control comes in with like a couple of like big guns that knock you around or whatever, and they're like, okay,
well, they have
wipe this problem up.
Yeah, the sound cannon, like the Stark sound cannons from The Incredible Hulk.
Yeah, so
what's his name has them too. Gosh darn it. Rhodey has them on his suit at some point.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I thought the fight scene was good, but maybe that's a place where you would have done some cutting in order to, like, if you really wanted to extend the plot, like, you could have borrowed a little from that. Because it goes on for... It's good, but it goes on for a while. I did think the funniest bit in that scene is the scene where... She tells everybody in the kitchen to leave
to get out,
they don't pay any attention. And then one guy gets punched and they're like, oh no, nope. And they just all leave. And I thought that was pretty good.
I like that the woman who's like, nope, was holding a whole bunch of fennel.
It's just like, nope.
Like, fennel of all things. It's like, that's a lot of fennel.
Sometimes you need a lot of fennel.
I like fennel, but it's you know what I mean? It's a bit of a, it's not weird, but it's, you know, it's not a
real usual.
Right. It's not like carrots or potatoes or something.
Right.
I also like the venue apparently has more than one wedding because we have the scene with the two brides outside.
I love that.
Really,
I like,
so do you.
The other one's all, crying, which, you know, I don't blame her, but,
That'll kind of ruin your wedding.
It will. That would be a real. I mean, I would. You should feel bad about
people
a little bad
talking about that for years
about pulling the fire alarm on that one. But you know,
I mean, it took malts to ruin your wedding, Dan.
I had some help.
I'm sorry.
Thanks,
guys. My parents went to a wedding once where the bride punched the mother-in-law.
Wow.
Oh wow. That's kind of cool. Well, it's a cool story.
Yeah.
Was there a reason?
I never asked that. I gotta find out what happened. I should ask them what happened to that wedding because I don't know. They mentioned that in passing at one point, like, oh, we went to this, you know, like how's your summer been or whatever.
Wow.
Went to a wedding where the bride punched the mother-in-law.
Can I share a fun fact that I learned actually while we were recording?
Sure.
Mohan Kapoor, who is the one who the actor who plays her father, is the Hindi dubbing voice of Doctor Strange.
Oh, I did know that.
Which is great.
Oh, cool.
I love that.
Yeah.
I looked him up at some point. Yusuf is his dick character's name.
Yusuf.
Yeah.
Yep. So, anyway, so that was just a little fun, random thing. This episode is not without its problems. It's mostly enjoyable, though, even despite the sort of plot issues. It's a good time. Like, I liked the fight scene. I love the wedding scene. The character moments are good. Like,
well, that's the thing, right? There are so many good character moments that it's hard to
ding it too badly.
The one, and it's, to me, it's just, I mean, that's the one problem. I don't think there's anything else particularly wrong with it.
No, I don't think
fairly,
so either.
It's a fairly glaring problem, but it's, but the rest,
it feels conspicuous because it's so sudden. Like, that's the weird thing is the rest of the show has done such a good job of navigating things that that felt like, it's like suddenly seeing something that's just entirely anachronistic. Like, you're watching a historical drama and there's just one scene with like somebody on a laptop and you're like, what? That was weird.
Yeah. It's this, the Starbucks cup in Westeros.
Yeah, exactly.
They took care of that.
Yep. They fixed it later. Yeah.
Fix that in post.
I think most of this episode is pretty great.
We called out the best parts, I think. For me, the best parts are the two conversations, which is the one with the Sheikh Abdullah, and then the other one between the dad and Amir. And then the dance routine.
The dance routine is great.
It's great.
And So we also have Nakia actually finds out about her, which you mentioned, which I think is the, we all kind of knew that was coming in as soon as she decided not to tell her. And then we also have, she decides not to tell her parents anything at the end, which for reasons that I think make, you know, makes sense in a,
as much sense as any other goofy teenage superhero.
Right. Like, it may be any other teenager decision.
You have to stick with the theme.
I think it's the
trope, I guess.
Part of me wonders if they will find out by the end of the show. I kind of feel like they probably will, but I don't know.
I can't remember if they do in the comic book.
I feel like, I mean, the MCU as a whole has not spent a lot of time doing the secret identity thing.
There's that one part though where they're talking about, like, she's asking about Nightlight or whatever, and they're all talking about it. And we're like, what do we know about her? Like,
yeah,
just that she's Muslim. She's like, no one is putting these things together.
Not everybody gets quiet and slowly turns towards her.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Come on.
I mean, there are a lot of them, right? Like, there are a lot of people who match that description in their community. But it is funny.
It's a comic book show, so obviously they're not going to figure it out like that.
But it would have been amusing though.
I do think that there's some value to the secret identity trope for kids, in that it's kind of boring when it's Tony Stark, because what does he care? But for kids, it helps sort of write more teenage stories where you feel isolated. You don't really know. You're unsure of yourself and the world around you, and the having a big secret like that helps write stories that are larger than life, obviously, but still sort of convey a sense of the isolation you feel a little bit when you're growing up.
I'm not sure
if I'm entirely clear in my thinking there, but for some reason it works for Peter Parker, and they went back to it.
Right. I mean, not only that, was like literally about maintaining a secret identity. But I agree with you that it's where do we just see, I feel like, something else about this? But like essentially it wasn't Arrow. It was not Arrow. It was something recently. Maybe it was, I don't know, maybe it was Superman Lois or something, but it was like the fundamental dealing with the morality question of, do you let your, you know, teenage kid essentially be a superhero? Or how does that make you as a parent, right? Like, is that something responsible you should be doing? Yeah. Or is that not something you should be? Yeah, like, I think there is an argument in there about that. Like, well...
Yeah, and Aunt May does the same thing, right? She is... she's not super into it.
Right.
But she's not into it either, although I don't know. It's kind of weird. Ultimately, she gives him his blessing, or gives him her blessing, as she shuffles off this mortal spider web. but it's... I think it keeps the character interesting and fresh if her parents and her community don't know. Although, at this point, all of her friends know, right? Kamen knows.
Yeah.
That's Brian true. Knows. Bruno knows. And Nakia knows.
Brian and Bruno know. That is
Brian and Bruno both know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually, you mentioned Kamran, and I wanted to actually. So here's my, I can't tell if I'm being too, not exactly cynical, but suspicious. Like, the show goes to great lengths to point out that he has maybe been disingenuous in terms of striking up a relationship with her, but that he genuinely likes her and seems to be running interference.
Yeah.
But part of me has
I legitimately believe the whatever thug number two's teasing of him that he's sweet on her.
Yeah, but I have that same time in the back of my head is like, what if this is all a long play to a good cop, bad cop routine where they're trying to make her sympathetic. I don't think so. But yeah.
Help her out. I mean,
yes. You know. Yeah, he does get smashed towards the end of that and arrested. So yeah, it's not really that helpful.
He's honest. I mean, I think, I really doubt that he's going to turn over another card in this.
I do. I mean, and then where I, again, talking about bringing stuff in, I think there is that character does exist in the comics, as I recall.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he's juiced up in some way, isn't he?
Also, I don't think he's a good guy.
I think he's also an inhuman.
Yeah. Yeah, it's my right, so here vague is, under he's a collection.
Clandestine, he's part clandestine like she
is. So, but so I guess the question is whether or not he's got another shoe to drop, but unclear.
Yeah. Speaking of the clandestines, I mean, I just read up very quickly.
I was not familiar with these people at all.
I wasn't familiar with them either.
They're called clandestine for a reason, guys. Come on.
I think you mean clandestine.
Oh, clandestine.
Yeah, I guess it's supposed to be clandestine, but, I guess they show up in the X-Men a fair amount, and some other books, but, they start out in Persia. I think it starts out in ancient Persia and then, like most everything ends up in England.
Sure. Yeah.
It's like the characters start out as genies, who basically come from some other dimension and are trapped in objects and things like that. And then somehow, I guess they get out and become real boys and girls and they end up being like posh British people.
comic slightly problematic. But it starts
out, it starts out in with its roots in Muslim culture, I guess.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah. So here we have it essentially like, we have a group, they're in India during the partition. We get that reference again to people disappearing. I think mm-hmm. that bit at the end where there's a bit at the end where our villain, Najma, says to Kamala, why should I be nice to the person someone who betrayed me? And I feel like there's a shoe there to drop about the grandmother, right? The grandmother disappeared, right. And it sounds like maybe the story is actually decided not to go through with all of this. Like perhaps had a family, for example, and decided I don't want to blow up this planet just to go home. I would like to stay here.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's my take.
That would help explain it a little bit more because it did seem like sort of. But that's an extreme reaction to she's done because she just does not want to endanger herself unnecessarily is all.
Right. And so we also get the text as read to Bruno saying that they were banished rather than, like that they're in a phantom zone concept rather than, we're just stuck here.
Right.
We went on vacation.
Yeah, I think they're probably, I think in the comic book, there is some, at least some of them are bad guys. I think they I couldn't go back and read all the
all you didn't the do the homework you know, geez, John.
30 40 50 years of history, so there's definitely an element of them being evil but tricksters or whatever.
Well, I mean, they certainly they punch a guy in the kitchen in the face for no there's no reason.
Yes.
Why? So it's not like we'll kill anybody who gets in our way to achieve our goal. It's just we're just going to be violent dicks at random. Maybe it's to clear out the rest. It's just a weird.
Yeah.
It's a very strong-armed kind of thing, right? It's less objective.
We're not fooling.
We mean business? Yeah. Yeah, because it's less objective-based violence and more just violence for the sake of big dogging it, you know, like growling real loud.
Yeah. So we now, so if they were banished here and then we're assuming that maybe the going to the temple and finding the bracelet, and they mention, as we should mention, that there are two.
Yeah. Which, I mean, I think we guessed, or at least I guessed that last week.
But they confirmed, that there was another one that they did not find.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And then there's speculation that
the British took it, which is a real good bet.
Well, it's the Ten Rings, that the other one is the
Ten Rings. Well, right. So that maybe the Ten Ring, maybe there's some connection with the Ten Rings, the organization, as well as the actual artifacts.
So wait, you think the Ten Rings make the other bangle?
Is the other bangle, yeah. I mean, maybe? I don't. Some people there is that speculation out there.
They do seem to be connected. They may have a similar.
They may. People are saying.
People familiar with the situation. Now, I was going to say, I think
it's, many people.
It seems like maybe they have a common origin, perhaps.
Yeah, that's what we were
talking about. Seems at almost, top. Yeah, almost I think assured. That's, yeah,
which also suggests alien. I mean,
and it seems like it's probably a Krieger.
But it also does. I mean. We know, you know, Guy, you pointed out that Carol said in the Ten Rings, in the Shang-Chi posting that she's not seen anything like this, but it's possible that, like, we have known in the past there have been, like, Kree factions and stuff. So maybe there was a Kree faction on Earth that, you know, thousands of years ago or something. Because that guy has clearly been buried there for a long time with the severed arm, etc.
Well, that's where the Inhumans came from, right?
Right. Exactly. In the comics.
Which is where I think we maybe... going with it, right? Like, are the genie the progenitors of Inhumans with some Kree stuff?
It was the Kree doing genetic manipulation
I'm aware of the comic stuff.
Yeah, we've discussed this before, though, that the Inhuman stuff was traversed really well and you're really a lot in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and it's a question as to whether or not they want to retread that ground or change stuff or whatever. I think they're inclined to just sort of leave it alone. Well, I think because it's
because it's
weird and complex, and you know it's just a lot.
I don't think they're going
to
mention Inhumans at all.
I kind of agree with that. I think they've decided to sort of shuffle stuff sideways into a different idea that's maybe connect, like has some of the same hallmarks, but is a different strand.
Right. Yeah, because we definitely see. I mean, that's not even ancient Kree, right? That's like 100 years ago. So for...
But the temple could be
older. For
the
Kree, that's like not that long ago, right? I mean, even for us, we're...
Right. But that, what, the temple
1942?
That temple could be much older, for example. We don't really know.
I think that's the idea, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they... So they said they'd been on Earth for 100 years.
Yes.
Which is not hundreds. Like, specifically, the second time I watched it. I noticed that it wasn't just a stand-in word for ever. Like it's not like eternal ones kind of thing. It was specifically about 100 years rather than hundreds, which I guess limits it to some point. Like it can't be, they can't be part of the Kree creating a whole bunch of Inhumans in ancient times kind of thing. Do you know what I mean? Like there's
those,
it's not long enough to affect much rather than
Side note that I think I mentioned to you guys, Easter egg that I enjoyed, Sana Amanat, who we mentioned a couple of weeks ago, who's an editor, is in the wedding scene. It was weird because it's a scene where like they're cutting all the different people and then they have a cut to her and a zoom in. I'm like, why do I know that? Is that somebody I know? Right, like you have that moment when you recognize a face, and you're like, "Do I know that person?"
Right. I wonder if there's a lot of people in that scene that are
there. Maybe she's the only
like
one
friends and friendly to the people involved. And
But that's nice, given how much of that story is tied, how much of the Ms. Marvel as a title is connected to her. What else? Should we do? I know we got a letter addressing some stuff in Ms. Marvel. Do you guys want to do a ritual, wrap this up, and then jump over the
letters
page?
Yeah, let's do a ritual. I feel like we've been doing a bit of a running ritual, but let's do that first.
Okay.
John, do you want to go first? Because I feel like I already sort of tipped my hand a little bit while doing
I think I'm going to go with a light biff. Because I really enjoyed it overall. It's just that one thing that, you know, seems wrong, I guess. But the other parts I liked so much that I think it kind of makes up for that, because like I said, you know, the dance routine, those two conversations are really great. And just the way they unfold the whole family stuff still is they're hitting all the right notes for that stuff. And even like the, you know, damage control being a bunch of jerks in the mosque, you know, walking in there with their shoes on and all that stuff. Mm. It's, you know, none of that's okay. And, but is, you know, probably exactly what would happen and probably happens all the time. So, the other stuff I really liked, I just, you know, wish they had teased out that heel turn a little longer and had a little bit more explanation to it. So,
yeah,
but I'm still, you know, light Biff.
Light Biff. Oh, I'll go next. I'm going to give it a Biff. I agree that part was messy and weird, but it wasn't enough to detract from my overall enjoyment of the whole thing. Mm-hmm. It is clunky, but it is not like we all knew those people would be bad guys. So it doesn't make me feel that bad about like, oh no, they are suddenly revealed to be bad guys, as opposed to like, you know, two episodes down the road or whatever. I hadn't gotten wrapped up very much in thinking these guys are great. So for me, it didn't bug me as much. I just definitely noticed it. And the stuff, as John mentioned, all the wedding scenes, the character interactions, all of that is super fun. It continues with the tone that we've gotten out of this series, which I really enjoyed. We get to see Kamala use her powers a little bit more and like start to get a little more control over them, which is a lot of fun. And we start unpacking some mythology stuff, which I am very interested in, because, you know, there are clearly some tie-ins with what's going on elsewhere in the MCU. I really don't know where they're going with it, but I'm kind of fascinated. This is sort of tangential, but there was an interview with Kevin Feige somewhere recently where he talked about sort of, as we come to the end of the Phase 4 of Marvel movies, just the, like, it's going to become more apparent where the next sort of large story is going. And I'm kind of curious to see, because we know already that Ms. Marvel will appear in the next Captain Marvel movie, that this is going to be a part of that somehow. So I'm intrigued to unpack sort of the connections to things like Shang-Chi or Captain Marvel and just sort of what the future of the MCU is. So I'm still enjoying it.
I think our carefully tuned rating system suffers a little bit when it comes to doing these multi-part.
Could that be?
When it comes to doing some of these multi-part shows, in the, you know, when you're doing Arrow or something, you can say, "Oh, this was a good one. This was a bad one. Next one." It's like you're doing a reset for the most part each time, and you can be like, "Yeah, that one worked. That one didn't," and it's fun and
here's
goofy.
Here's another one. We could use Star Trek Pips.
Oh, I love it. Things.
Because then you can get
a lieutenant commander, lieutenant JG,
you can get a commander, Commander Riker, you can get like lieutenant
the Geordi,
I love it.
Data,
lieutenant junior grade, ensign.
I'm all for it. So
that's going to go into review.
We did it.
Okay. All right.
It's good. Well, yeah. Okay. Readers, write in and let us know what you think, or you know, get on the
quick question. Do we have to rename the show?
Get on the subspace beacons.
No, we don't.
No.
What if it's Captain Biff and like Ensign Alex?
Okay,
now you're crossing the streams.
We're crossing the streams. So what I am going to give this one is a marquee version of a 3-pip. I don't even know what that means.
I don't either.
On Voyager, the Maquis have like it. The Maquis have a different.
I you said Marquis.
I probably did. Yeah, I probably said Marquis. Anyway, the Maquis have a different thing. Anyway, long story short, our rating system is sort of predicated on the thing being an atomic unit, and in this. These shows, it's less so. Like, they need to do a bunch of furniture moving in order to move stuff around, and I do feel that they compressed the story of our villains or suspected villains, the genies, more than I feel was warranted or motivated by the what we've seen of them. So that part of the story is a pretty big John Jr. for me. The other part is a pretty big Biff. I was gonna say John Jr., but I'm gonna give it a light Biff just to go along with you guys.
Yeah, I was torn.
Yeah. So I don't know. Lieutenant Commander Data, I guess. Yeah, well, Data's pretty awesome.
That's exactly what I was thinking. A Lieutenant Commander Data,
Yeah.
I wonder if you could even do. You could even say, well, like a Lieutenant Commander Tuvok. You know, like. Not quite as good as a Data, but you know.
First of all, I think he's a lieutenant, so that's different.
He's not.
What? He's not a lieutenant.
Yeah, it's not an Ensign Kim.
I've actually been rewatching with Hank. We watched a bunch of Deep Space Nine episodes, and we're like, okay.
Oh, he's Lieutenant in the first four seasons.
We're watching some Voyager episodes, and he starts out with Lieutenant Commander Pips, although he is called Lieutenant several times incorrectly.
It says he's a Lieutenant in seasons 1-4, and then a Lieutenant Commander in seasons 4-7.
Okay,
but they may screw that up.
But I think his pips. Yeah, pips are screwed
the costuming
up.
Screwed up. Yeah,
I think so. I'd have to go back and look now. But
unless you want to talk about Strange New Worlds, which was good too.
Nope.
Yeah. Okay. Kenobi.
Nope.
No.
Nope.
We're stuck. We're stuck talking about this.
Nope.
Okay.
This is the show we're doing.
So a weak biff for Strong John Jr. I loved so many things about this episode in particular. All of the touching family stuff, all of the wedding, the cultural stuff. I love the ancillary characters that we see. I love their interactions. I like the way they interact with each other. I really enjoy is maybe the bad word, but I respect the way that they're playing Department of Damage Control as like the effectively xenophobic and racist thugs. And I suspect they're throwing that character under the bus rather than the one that we've been familiar with before. For pretty much that reason. A lot of strong things, and then some weak stuff in there, which I kind of wish they'd worked out. If anything, I feel like maybe they stuck a bunch of fight in here because they thought that we wouldn't be charmed and totally enamored with the day-to-day life that we saw and we enjoyed. So I guess in that sense, I kind of wish they'd taken a little bit more time. I don't need to see a fight so much as I want to see the characters just do their thing and learn about the world a bit. That's my take. I don't think I'm used to being the last one. How do we end that?
That's
ritual
fine.
Ended.
There we go. Ritual ended.
I don't know. Like, do I put like a little... Like a cup of the candle or something?
Ring the gong.
Okay.
Can I do some FU?
Usually your mean side doesn't come out until after the show. Yeah. Oh, sorry.
In the episode Caretaker. in the first half of season one, Tuvok wore the rank insignia of Lieutenant Commander, but he was referred to as Lieutenant. This costume gaffe was later corrected as of cathexis.
It does always bug me.
Halfway through season one, they change. You know, they get the costume right.
does bother me a lot when people make this mistake like this. We talked about this a little bit in Superman and Lois at the beginning of the season. They have a guy who's Lieutenant General, and he keeps calling him Lieutenant. It's like that's not the correct form of address. That is
exactly right.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
It's just the details.
Yeah. And O'Brien constantly. O'Brien, like, it has Lieutenant Pips in Star Trek. The Next Generation, and they just call him Chief, and then it's like then the pips like disappear.
Right. I mean, they call him. Yeah. They eventually.
Busted? What happened?
Eventually, they clarify that he is a warrant officer, which is a different.
But they give him
kettlefish.
The new, which nobody else I've
the,
never
the
seen
little patch.
Wear
yeah.
That one, but
yeah.
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 Anyway,
he's also God. I love O'Brien. He's just the best.
We veered into Star Trek territory again.
Sure. What do you mean veered into? We sojourned out into superheroes. We live Star Trek.
You steered us into that nebula. All right.
Well, wait till we see the episode.
There's coffee in that.
There's coffee in that nebula. Yeah.
All right. Let us jump over to the letters page really quick so we can do this and then wrap up. Okay. We've got a letter from reader Jeff. Reader Jeff writes, "Hi, Team Biff, longtime listener, first time prospective letter segment content provider. Two questions about the Ms. Marvel premiere. The first pretty frivolously pedantic, the second a little more serious-ish, all things considered. First, why is everyone assuming AvengerCon is taking place at a rebuilt Camp Lehi? I've seen this on multiple comment threads and Marvel wikis. Let me finish before we address it. And heard it on your show, of course. According to the map on the flash drive that Black Widow accessed in Winter Soldier, this guy, Jeff, is going deep. Camp Lehi is in southern New Jersey, roughly where Fort Dix is in real life, closer to Philly than NYC. Nat and Steve drove from afternoon to night to get there. Kamala and Bruno take a Jersey City Metro bus that clearly says AvengerCon on the front and downtown on the side. What I think's gone unsaid in the show is that quote-unquote Camp Lehi is just set dressing, part of the immersive experience of AvengerCon. You can imagine the radio commercial, join us this weekend as the Jersey City Convention Center becomes Camp Lehi, the place where it all began, the first AvengerCon. I know Kamala says at one point they're going to Camp Lehi, but she's the kind of all-in nerd that would speak about event in terms demanded by the marketing. We'll get to the second question in a moment. We can address that.
Wait, can we stop? And just
we're stopping and discussing that before we move on.
Stanley has passed, and it is not on us to do this anymore. But you get the very first Biff no prize. That is exactly the kind of no prize letters to the editor that you would get in the back of Marvel Comics, and I love it. Awesome, no prize. It's in the mail. Perfect.
It's not in the mail.
It's on the podcast. This is what you get. It's right here.
With no prizes, you get nothing.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, I thought that was a known joke. But yeah, you're not getting anything. But our respect, which, kind of useless.
Mm-hmm. Second question, and if this has been discussed somewhere online, please disregard, but let me know where. How does anyone on Earth at this time know anything about Captain Marvel? Carol is shanghaied to the Kree homeworld immediately after getting powers, has most of her 90s exploits in secret or in space, then doesn't return to Earth until the snap. She leaves again after Thanos is killed, out in space, and doesn't come back until right as the blip ends, then leaves again after Tony's private funeral. Yes, she dramatically punches through Thanos' ship, but the Avengers' plan is to send the gauntlet into the Quantum Realm, which they fail to do. They only win in the end because of Tony's enhanced armor and sleight of hand. Everyone else, including Carol, is knocked out of the fight by then. Teenage girls idolizing Nat or Shuri or the Wasp or even Pepper Potts in worlds is understandable, but MCU Captain Marvel is a ghost to Earth. Even the pose of the Veers statue at AvengerCon is a pose she struck underwater while attacking the Skrulls on the planet Torfa, right? None of this detracts from my enjoyment of the series so far, but I can't help wishing Disney had tossed Larson a few bucks to do something exciting in a cold open where the kids of Jersey City could at least see her in action. Thanks. If you read this far, your pal on the other side, Overcast, Jeff. So there is a thing that has been talked about online, a very small thing where there's a, at the AvengerCon, there is like a book at one of the booths called like I Was There, supposedly written by a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent. Although I think they said it was like there's several hundred feet away.
There's also Scott Lang's podcast.
There's interviews. Scott Lang's podcast addressed in the first episode.
Yeah.
So you have to sort of take from that what you will.
I think they also like shorthand a lot of it, right? Because the audience knows they're gonna let the world of the MCU you kind of know what the audience knows for the most part, because if you look at the AvengerCon thing, I was going back to see if there's anything at the beginning that makes it look like it's Camp Lehi. It's really hard to tell, but it probably not. It looks like just like warehouse buildings, but there's a guy dressed up as Drax.
Right.
How would they really know Drax?
Yeah. I think you got to wave a hand a little bit. So this is the from Marvel.com. There is a bit about all the Easter eggs at AvengerCon, and they mention in there, if you're searching for a firsthand account of the Battle of Earth, be sure and pick up a copy of the memoir I Was There, written by a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent detailing, quote, the clash between the heroes of Earth and the alien scourge threatening our fragile planet. Unquote. The book includes a conversation with Hawkeye and a first-hand account of Tony Stark using the Infinity Gauntlet, even though the author was 6,000 feet away. Which I enjoy.
6,000 feet? Okay.
I think it's kind of a gag, but
I'm trying to, in my head, it's about 3 kilometers
over a mile. I agree with John. You got to kind of hand wave this and be like, well, first of all, a lot of stuff went down. People have probably written articles and books and stuff. If something like this happened in our world, there would be a lot of media coverage of it, right? Historians would be digging into it and, reporters and journalists and all this stuff. So let's assume that after the fact, a lot of this stuff has been uncovered. Also, the Avengers have been a public-facing group since the Battle of New York, which is like a decade or more at this point. right? So like there is clearly some mythology surrounding them and probably a lot of stuff about all of them. You know, we know they're famous, yeah, right? Clint going out in New York, etc. Like,
well, we have a musical about him.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
So there's some, and I 100% believe that I believe it. In my headcanon is that after that kind of chaos, you get debriefed, and certainly Rhodey's going to he's going to be sitting with a cold cup of coffee and a lot of generals wanting to know what the hell, what was that about? Same as Steve and a bunch of other people. Like, they're going to tell the story. Who knows? Like, satellites are going to notice some weird, crazy streak coming in from the middle of nowhere and nuking like a ship that's
shaky. Yeah, and it did. Shaky cam footage somewhere, maybe.
Right.
Yeah. And it really did take out, like, it turned the tide, right? When Ms. Marvel, Carol Marvel showed up. Carol Marvel, that's what I call her.
Carol Marvel, that's her name. Please.
Her father, is Mr. Marvel.
It did. Like, it was a real downturn. Like, things were going real bad, man. And then they went back to being just normal.
Her father
real bad.
Is Shazam.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I take your point, Jeff, and I dig it, but I think the Camp Lehigh thing is that's an ollie sticking a tennis Jeff ball to the wall.
Jeff wins one and loses one.
Yeah, and this one is like a little too pedantic, sort of let it go kind of thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think this is the point where I would point you to the immortal words from Mystery Science Theater 3000's theme song. Just repeat to yourself, it's just a show. I should really just relax.
Just relax.
Says the three guys.
Oh, just
who do
I don't think Jeff's
about
bent out of shape about.
Yeah. No. I think it's just a thing. Yeah. I'm not suggesting you're angry. Just more of a.
Right.
You know what? Sometimes you just gotta let these things wash over you and be like, it's there because it's fun to have AvengerCon, and it's fun to have Kamala making her YouTube videos.
They're not going to explain everything.
It's not important.
Yeah.
Someone will eventually write the tie-in comic or book or something that explains all of that.
Yeah. Also, you're talking to three guys who, if you saw a photo of Sal Sonoigan, we would know immediately who it is.
What?
I'm saying that, like, there's, like,
what
fandoms get weird.
That?
You know, weird. You know, what word? Sal, what's his name? Sal
Sonoigan?
Sagoyan, there you go.
I can't
from Apple Script.
Yeah,
from Apple.
Yeah, yeah. If we saw a photo of him, we'd know who he was.
That is true.
Okay,
that's what I'm saying.
Point.
I'm trying to say that.
Sorry,
I'm trying to say that people
Snell Snowygon, and I was very confused.
I didn't call him Snell. I called him Sal.
Know who he was? It almost sounds like you don't know who he is.
Sal Sagoyan. I'm just saying.
Word nerd.
I'm just saying. Oh God.
Yeah,
this whole thing is an Anson Kim of an episode. I'm just saying, fandom does weird Anson stuff Kim. To people's brains,
never,
right? Like, you
never sure. promoted.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway.
All right.
Do you have any other? Can you save me from this? I really thought that was a Sal dunk.
I nailed it. All right. That is all we have time for this week. We will, of course, be back next week to discuss episode 4 of Ms. Marvel. But until then, I would like to thank my fabulous co-host, Guy English. It is truly always a pleasure.
When you punch it makes me believe it even less. But thank you. It's always fun.
I don't know what to do then. I would give you a hug if you were right here. John Moltz, thanks for being here.
I'll be segoying you guys again next week.
In all the familiar places. Thank you, everybody out there, for reading along. We appreciate your support. If you would like to send us a letter, you can do so by firing up your good old email client and writing biff@theincomparable.com. Or you can hit us up on Twitter @BiffCast. We will be sure to read and think very, very thoroughly about these important questions that we've been asked.
Don't be a dick to our readers.
My sincere voice sounds
to
you like
to
I'm being a dick. That's the problem.
Yeah, okay. We'll have fun. It'll be great.
Anyways, thank you everybody out there for reading. We'll see you next week.